now that we're here. Yeah. Anybody, you know, Puppy, I've seen you before. If you want to come in and hang out and talk shop or promote anything, you know, this is that time when we do it every 2 weeks, kind of hang out. And I'll usually discuss a few things I have going on. Typically share the link to the last session, which is above in the nest, if you want to check that out. And then, you know, if you have questions or want to promote any work, you know, you're more than welcome to do that as well.
Cool. Yeah. I actually have some old works I'm trying to revisit, and actually get off the pot and finish. So it's kind of nice to be back in this. It'd be fun to do a weekly writing prompt exercise too, if anyone's down for that. I used to do those on Wattpad a long time ago, and I really enjoyed them. But
yeah, I'm into it. I used to do a Friday night session on Clubhouse some years ago, and cool. it was very structured. It wasn't just like a hangout session. It was very mediated and kind of guided in terms of participation and feedback that way. And it was, I think it was like a 1 hour session, and then you would end up with like three kind of short pieces. Well, short for me, cause I'm a slow writer, but you know, other people kind of came out with other stuff. And if it is something that you want to do, you know, keep me posted, and I'll keep an eye out for it at the least.
You know, I'm not always easily contained, as you know.
Yeah.
But I would, discipline is a learning virtue as well. So, I like to learn from others, and more so, I like to have my stuff sort of read and kind of seen, because I feel like I have a style for sure. It complements the way I talk even. So it's, I mean, well, it's like it now. It's probably like, I know half of it's like terrible, but it's like terrible in the sense of how it's like, not maybe the norm, I guess, but then I don't know anything. And so that's what's so fun, is I'm kind of going back into this and reminding it. So it's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Again, the link is up there from our last session. So I record these locally. I don't record them on Twitter, and then I release them as podcasts episodes. Awesome. Every 2 weeks. So I usually release it the Monday before the Wednesday session that we have here. But
so right now I'm going to be going out live to a whole nother audience that's not in this room.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For
Dude.
Sure.
And I'm like, that means I'm omnipresent right now in two universes, although technically existing in this primary universe now.
Yeah. You never know where people will find you.
Yeah, I like it.
In that way. But sure, yeah, if there are pieces that you want to talk about or, you know, are advocating for that you have released, you know, if you have links for them, feel free to put them up in the nest. I usually will put like the last thing that I have been kind of working on. But the last thing that I worked on and released was Tartaria. And I'm honestly tired of talking about it at this point. I am in the middle of getting a new cut of the documentary for Chicago 1893 together using AI. So it's going to be a longer cut than the one that I released in December. And that awesome. Is going to be over in Barcelona at their documentary event coming up next month. So that's kind of the stuff I'm working on.
That sounds awesome. So is it like a Tartarian documentary style kind of piece or something like that? And again, I know you're tired of talking about it, so I'm willing to shut the hell up and move on to whatever else.
Cause oh, no. All good. Yeah. This is actually completely different.
Cool.
So the Chicago 1893 project, and here, maybe I can dig up a link for you to check it out if we have not ever talked about it. Because I've been talking about this project for like 5-6 years, so it's not new in any capacity for me. But if it is new for you, then, you know, that's just as good. So I'll post this up. I have a documentary and a book out. You know, it started as a book and then kind of advanced into these other formats. So last year I did a new cut like a very short 4-minute cut, under 4 minutes of the documentary, really condensed. We're kind of stretching it out a little bit more. I'm thinking it'll probably be about 20 minutes long for this next version. And then that'll kind of go out to competition and stuff. Oop, yeah. See, Chris, you requested at the same time that I added you. So I think you did it yourself. So now you're all good. Yeah. So that's kind of the thing I'm working on. Chris knows about that. He has seen.
Yeah, man, that's cool. Great use.
Load of that footage.
I was going to say, really cool use of AI. I love the using it for sort of these types of. Well, where you can sort of complement sort of existing archival footage and sort of make, I mean, this is really this a whole boom in itself, really, just because it kind of lends all kinds of different creative formats. Awesome stuff, man.
Yeah, 100%. Hey, Chris, did you connect? Because it says it's connecting. Are you up here? Or have you? Because I saw you were reacting.
My thing says he's a listener still. He might need to drop and join again if he wants to.
Maybe it was because we both sent the thing at the same time. It boofed. I don't know. Probably. Yeah, either way. I've sent you a new invite. Hey, what's up? You're here. You made it. You're live.
Yeah. It's one of those things that like you request me, I request you. We both try and shake each other's hands at the same time and none of us get anything done in any which way. Pass.
Yeah. I should have just waited.
Mike
for you.
Went for the fist bump. Chris went for the handshake.
Yeah. Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. How is your day going, Nick? What have you been working on? And you're here early. I feel like you were here rapidly.
I had this set at 3. I travel a little bit for work and I just got out of the office and hit the road. I got to be back a little early today. I've got a long commute. So I just wanted to check in.
Dope.
I'm not working on anything per se. I got to a big milestone in my my novel Semperis. I completed a readable draft front to back, all 850 pages, and I printed some out and gave, you know, one to a close friend, one to my mom and dad to just, you know, like get the first beta reader eyes on it. And then, you know, I'm a big proponent of you got to stop. You got to put it down. You got to walk away from it for a little bit. You got to take some time to just recharge your battery. You can come back at it with some fresh eyes after a little bit. So I'm reading Moby Dick right now for the first time. I'm about halfway through. You know, my stack of things to read just grows. I try to buy, you know, any friends on Twitter who publish something, I try to buy that because I think, you know, friends should support each other. But then my stack just grows and it's like, I got to get through them. I got Brothers Kazmarov. I got Crime and Punishment. I got Moby Dick. Like, I've never read any of those. So I've got to do that.
Get some bricks on your hands.
Well, at the same time, you know, getting through some of my friends' stuff. So I'm trying to take advantage of this time away from my main project to read some really good stuff, and that's it, you know. So I've got a friend in one of our writing group chats. I don't know if he'd want me to name him or anything, so I won't. But he read through basically part one of 3 of my novel Semperis with, you know, the critical eye of a reader. You know, so I get like my friends and family reading it and they're like, wow, I can't believe, like, how did you come up with this? And, you know, they're reading it from sort of, they don't have the eyes of like a writer. So I'm getting really good feedback from my friend just about, you know, editing stuff or characterization here or like, clarity there or whatever. And, so taking those and setting them aside. Like, I'm kind of trying to read through them, but I'm trying to not put too much of my mind into this at the moment, just because, like I said, I think it's good to get like some space and some distance away from your work from time to time. But, I mean, that's going on. That's huge. Like, when you can get a writer, just to look at your work with a truly critical eye, I mean, it's been just the little feedback I've got so far has been huge. But I published a little short, I guess a story you could call it, maybe a vignette. I don't know.
What do you like to call it?
Pamphlet, I guess. So I'm a huge fan of Western movies, and Tombstone is my favorite movie. And at the end of Tombstone, if you guys are familiar, Wyatt Earp gives Doc Holliday a book, a little pamphlet, actually, and says, "My friend, Doc Holliday." Doc Holliday's lying on his deathbed, and these two have been best friends. And it's just like a fictional thing. It never happened in real life. Obviously, Doc and Wyatt were friends in real life, but you never get to peek inside this book. And so I just wrote about 2,000 words of what I thought was in that book. And I published that to my Substack, Nicolaos at Substack.com. It's in my Twitter profile as well,
Put it up in the nest.
I don't know how to post stuff
Well, let me walk you through it. So here's how you do it.
Yeah.
You go to that.
I'm driving at the moment. Well, so you know what?
Use your nose. So here's how you do it. You go to that tweet, and then you click on the bottom right icon as if you were going to send it to a DM group. But at the very top, there will be a new option that will allow you to send it to this Twitter space. Are you seeing it?
Yeah, there we go.
We're learning together, you know, and that's what we do here.
There you go.
Yeah, perfect. It'll show up in just a second. I think Chris has a question for you.
You know, I was figuring while you're reading Moby Dick and everything, have you ever seen the movie In the Heart of the Sea?
No.
You should definitely see that movie. Good Chris Hemsworth movie. Yeah, it's related. I don't want to say how it's related, but you should definitely check it out as far as trying to understand an aspect of that story, or at least one of the stories you're reading. I won't say which one.
I've got a long list. So I've got my stack of books to read. I've also got a long list of shows and movies that I've got to watch. So I just put it up there near the top of that. Thank you very much. I don't know if anybody's ever made a movie of Moby Dick. I hope they don't. I feel like there's no way that a movie could do it justice.
There's the series with Jean-Luc Picard from the 90s.
Yep.
Star Trek?
Yeah. I can't remember his name now. His name is
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart. Yeah. I kept wanting to say like Patrick Harris or something. I don't know. I was getting stupid for a second, but yeah, thank you. Also to the other folks hanging out, this is not an exclusive club. You are welcome to come and hang out and talk about your work, ask questions of these guys. Most importantly, keep me off of the mic.
So I, you know, with Moby Dick, I'm normally one for plot and characters. I'm a big fan of A Song of Ice and Fire personally, and that's like a very intricate plot. The characters, like you get inside their skin and like the conflicts in the hearts of each of the characters and how they play against each other and like page turners and stuff. And Moby Dick is like really not that. It's, you know, there's not, at least halfway through the book, there's not really a whole lot of action. It's a lot of just exposition, but man, it's brilliant. Like Melville, this isn't something I typically read, but he just, his way with words and kind of the themes that he imparts, I'm digging it. And like I said, I hope that they never really turn it into a movie, like a modern remake. I just don't know how they could do that. But
I will say Heart of the Sea will change your fucking mind for sure.
All right. I'm down for that. Yeah. I'll give that a shot for sure. Thank you. So, I took a break from the novel, but I have all these ideas I've got like ideas for 5 other books now that I just, you know, like I jot notes. My imagination is overactive. And I had this idea to do this thing for Tombstone, kind of an homage because I, you know, it's my favorite movie. And, while I was taking a break from Semperis, my novel, I just put that together and I was pretty happy with it. So yeah, I encourage, you know, if we're promoting stuff, that's what I'd be promoting at this point.
Yeah, and awesome.
Otherwise, yeah, I just want to listen to other writers talk and talk shop, like you said, but that's what I got going on right now.
Wait, the link is in your bio? You don't even put the link in the post? You're a madman. What are you guys doing?
Well, they throttle you if you put Substack links, don't they?
Listen, I'm going to explain something here to everybody who believes in this nonsense story. Okay. Look, you are asking people to make many, many clicks. So you're like, oh, I'm not getting the reach that I want. You're not getting the reach either way. Okay. So put your links inside of your posts and make it nice and easy for us. Don't ask us to click more than two times. Let me click into the post. Let me click into the link. I'm not clicking into the post, clicking into the thing, looking at them. It's nonsense. Post your links and pump your shit. All right.
Like, hell yeah, brother.
Just well, get after it.
I'd actually say there's a better way to explain that. More of the time, a lot of what goes on in Twitter is that whole like getting deboosted and stuff like that. It's really not like that. It's more like if you ever play RPGs, if you have a negative attribute to your character, that's kind of how the Twitter posts work. It's like, you know, where a post with a link, it'll be like a -1 on something. The other part of it is that you just need to do as much shit to like keep that -1 something so minor. You know, it's really a gamification of the system, and it's more to the idea that they really want more people to be posting more like meaningful stuff and often. And so there's point systems. It's a social score. It's the way they fuck it. And you know, it's anything that you feel deboosts you, just make sure, you know, you're replying to people, you're engaging authentically, you're doing your thing. And I think one way or another, you'll get even more reach. It's not going to be the other thing I think people do is they think, oh, I'm not getting, you know, 14 or 15 follows a day, you know, from all the stuff I'm putting out. That's kind of, that doesn't happen as much. You'd have to be a certain size account for that percentage to actually work. Most accounts, and I mean like most sub, like 18,000 accounts, 18,000 follower accounts, they don't get more than a couple of follows a day. And it also depends on like what else you do. Like being on these spaces will help. Hosting spaces does more, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's all these different ways of gamifying it where you add score to what you do.
Right. Yeah, 100% with all that. Yeah, again, folks, if you're hanging out and you just like listening, that's fair. If you have stuff to talk about or want to promote, we'd love you to come up and hang out. You know, this is a very open and chill sort of session. No tasks required. You are not you don't need to do any work here, but you are invited to, you know, get your message out or ask questions. You never know. People might have answers for you about your social credit score, things like that.
On Twitter only. I don't go into any other social credit scores of any other shape or type. It's not financial or social media advice. I'm, you know, all that addendum to it.
Yeah, that's fair. Dan, go ahead.
I'm torn on it. I will say that I think that's partly because I'm also an old dog. Let's just keep that in mind. Old dog, meaning, are you 50 over? Yes. Okay. So you're an old dog. When did you get on Twitter? 2008 when I arrived. Okay, cool. So you've been here since it's been here. As you know, has it always been the same sort of thing? Well, I think it's gone in a lot of directions. It definitely, you know, you never really had to think about gamification as much as it seems to be the rhetoric of today, which is unfortunate. We have more compliance authorizations, sort of. We have more people willing to say, basically play Survivor than to actually learn Survivor skills. And I think that's probably the, you know, that's really the metaphor I would use. And we're figuring out how to either fuck people over or do what we can to stay on the island versus actually learn anything about what it would be to actually try to stay on an island. And I think that's more about making sure you're authentic. I know there's a game that it is one social network out of 36 that we can talk about. And if you're like, what do you mean? What are the other 36 networks? Well, I would say as the writer, you have a wide range of networks that are probably individual groups that you could target. And then you have whole sectors that are specific to your interests, and you have other social networks that you can mine from. So you don't have to feel like you're basically at Elon Musk's, you know, peril. However, it is a space you love to haunt. I get it. But what you should kind of do is do a real experiment, which is make what you feel is a really great crafted post. Now, when I say that, think about the fact that Twitter itself is your writing canvas, meaning create a creation in the actual post. And then, yes, do the insane. Pay $200 as an ad and run it across the entire demographics of the system, as ads allow you to do. Now you can jump all the way to the front of the line to see if there's any population on this server, planet, social network that actually could meet the level of intellect that your writing might be of. I think that to be a wickedly delicious story in itself, if you think about it.
I'm with
you. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I did. I made posts that were very interesting and emotional at times. And then I bought them as ads. And then I looked at that traffic. And what I actually found was, unless you spend, like, the more you spend, the more quality people you get. But it's interesting. It makes you think about quality of people. And it actually reveals that Twitter's very own advertising system does think about you as a quality of person that you are. And then it starts to really make some really interesting things as to who actually reacts and likes to your content. Are they checkered users? If it was with checks, were they not? It just gives you something to look at and analyze. Whereas right now, all you can do is complain about the world against you, correct? You don't have any other data. All I'm saying is go get some data and have something to write about.
You know what, Dan, there's another piece there too that you're touching on that I like, which is natively posting in regards to, like, if you write, this is an editorial platform first. You can post all of your words here. Like, Nick, you could post that 2,000 word pamphlet right here as a huge thread. And that would be probably a really interesting way to go about putting some eyes on there. Or even if you only posted like one tweet per day over the course of however long it would take you to do that. And you would be able to get like advanced reach off of that. Or even like retweeting components of that. That's something that I do pretty frequently for the last couple of years.
You could experiment too. For example, you could do your posted tweets versus scheduled tweets in the media system. Which one get more views? Mm-hmm. It's the same actual tweet, except you posted it at the time versus the computer backend posted it. Does the computer backend posting something actually give it more relevance because the computer posted it on your behalf because you use the media tool service that they would really love people to use, but not enough people are using it yet. But now you're using it. And that's nice of you. Do you see the pattern? Mm-hmm. Tell me you don't see that. It's
also everywhere. Kind of about like what you already do. Like that's the other part of it. Is like the data only works if it's something that you're already doing and then you're collecting data from what you're doing. Once you change, everything changes with you. And that's kind of the thing I've seen most people kind of pitfall is like, oh, you know, I see that this the algo has been updated. I'm going to turn into a reply guy. And then, you know, those first 3 days doing that, you've ruined the last 6 months of algo that your, you know, your account is trained on. And now, you know, you've kind of started fresh, regardless of all the, you know, pluses and minuses to whatever the system is. You know, that's the other part is that you got to just kind of take the data from what you already do and not change what you do to then blame the data. It's like, oh, well, this said this doesn't work. It's like, no, it does work. You just need to do it for the next 6 months and then start tracking if something is effective or not within that system. You know, that's kind of the big thing about it.
Yeah, you went from being a genre writer to being a nonfiction writer, in a sense. Bad analogy.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, think about it this way. If you're a nonfiction writer and, you know, same thing like what you do, you know, you post a lot of stuff of historical value and everything like that. And then all of a sudden you're like, well, I'm going to write this fantasy epic that I've always wanted to. And you start posting images and then writing. It's like now I don't even know. I don't know if that'll not help you, but it'll definitely change some shit.
Yeah. No, I'm with all that because that's literally me, you know, for real.
Mud gang, bro. Mud gang.
Yeah. I don't know. Every couple of years I introduce new stuff into my repertoire, I suppose. I don't know. Keeping it fresh for me, keeping it fresh for the readers, keeping it fresh for the listeners here today, for the new folks that have come in, or for the people that we know, you know, you're welcome to come up. This is not a panel. This is very much an open discussion. You are welcome to bring your thoughts, or if you have questions that you'd like to post into the pill, that is also welcome. Hey, what's up, Heidi? I see you. If you want to come up here, I'll pass you an invite. You're inoculati, as we like to say. You know, happy to field any questions, or if you have particular comments, you can drop those into the pill if you want to promote something, or if you have a writing space that we should know about coming up, you know, feel free to tell us about those things. I've been trying to get around on the circuit and hang out and learn the folks and see how they do different things. There's a definitely kind of an interesting collection of spaces over the course of a week or a month that occur. You know, this is only every 2 weeks, but Gonzalo, he does a space on Tuesday evenings, and it's basically like a workshopping space. So if you have an idea and you want to kick it around and end up with something, you know, that's an opportunity. There's someone else that does a space that's more focused on book marketing. I think they only do it, you know, once a month. Redhead Media. Heidi and Stephanie do their space on Tuesday mornings if you're West Coast, into the mid afternoon if you are East Coast, and they kind of it's more topical focused, so they kind of jump through different themes and stuff like that per week, and those are all, you know, opportunities to learn the ecosystem and discuss your work, or at least get involved with the community. Yeah, man. What's up? What's up, Heidi? Come on up if you like. Chris, you got your hand raised.
Oh yeah. I was just seeing if Heidi was on stage. While we're on the subject, every Thursday at usually 12 noon Eastern, I host a space on, you know, Film 3. But we talk about a lot of different stuff. We talk about AI. We talk about Film 3. We talk about Web 3. You know, I discuss all the various crazy things that I'm doing. And, you know, I try and have people up who just are doing cool shit as well. And, you know, just see if they have anything to add to the situation or anything they want to ask about, especially when it regards to like AI production or just AI in general and helping them make their stuff, you know, take their stuff a little further, or even just, you know, make their stuff in general. If you guys, if anybody wants to kind of solo dolo their creativity. So yeah, I'll pin that up in a second. But yeah, I just wanted to kind of like present that if anyone wants to do more of a film oriented, and Michael usually shows up because we talk about the various stuff me and him are doing. So it's always a good happening time.
Yeah. Great space. And you know, a lot of folks run around in that scene that are also writers. I'm sending a response here, trying to. So there's folks kind of that have some crossover. Myself, I, you know, obviously do a little bit of film and do a little bit of writing. And I think they go pretty hand in hand. You know, you need some ideas to be able to produce something, either a book or onto the screen. You know, in that way. So
for sure.
Yeah. Heidi, I'm not sure why. Send a request if you can. I passed you an invite, but like I said, Chris had a problem coming up first. We were two ships passing in the night, and it might be a similar scenario. So I would say if you try that request, you know, give us a shot. Also, you know, shout out to the Melville White Whale and Moby Dick discussion, two ships passing in the night. Here we are, you know, doing it.
What do they call it in that book where they when you run past another whale ship, you like they bring their boats together and the captains meet with each other?
I don't know.
Parley?
it's not a parlay. It's like a one syllable word that I've never heard of before, but they do it a couple times. You know, they exchange letters with each other. Like, hey, I was at this port and I've got a letter for one of the guys on your ship. And the captains talk, and Ahab is always like, hey, have you seen the white whale? You know, he's trying to get clues as to where he could be. I feel like that's what we're doing here. Just captains trying to come together.
Yeah, that's fair.
On the topic of AI, I wanted to ask a question. I'm looking for some support to do like good renderings, art, to kind of support and promote my novel. I got in touch a little bit with Aesthetica, that account that he posts. It looks like AI art to me, or maybe it's not AI, or maybe he uses AI. I don't know. And he was going to try to help. And I know he's a really big account and really busy, but I don't know. You know, I don't think it's something I'd want to get into myself, really. I'd like to maybe work with somebody who's really good with the AI renderings to get some just some effective art to kind of paint the scenes. Mm-hmm. Of where I'm at. So I don't know if you guys have recommendations in terms of like, you know, I could do renderings for like $50 a pop or something, or if there's a certain account out there that you guys have interacted with.
This is what I would say. This is, you know, my reflection on that. I do this stuff, you know. I'm not only a member, the president, I'm also a user. I do these generations if, you know, my style is something that you like and you've seen it. Chris does that stuff. Dan does that stuff. The point I'm getting at is like, you might just poke around within the scene and see who's making things in a style that you like and then approach them. But most of the artists will take commissions in the world, you know, but whether it's in budget or not kind of becomes a different point. But, you know, that is the way you would, you know, give it a shot.
Sweet. Okay. I'm going to poke around in your guys' profiles. Yeah. The style is one thing. Like you go on to Bing or like Midjourney or whatever, and you put in a simple prompt and it's like, you can tell, like if you got a free version, it's like, you can just tell that it's like a quick and easy AI rendering. And that's all kind of what I want to avoid. If you could tell it's AI, that's one thing. But if you could tell that it's just like a really basic Midjourney prompt, you know, that's another thing.
Sure.
You know, I see some people though that have some AI art that's out there, and it's like, okay, you know, I get the sense that you probably had AI on this, but it still looks really good anyways. Right? So I'm hunting for that stuff right now. That's my white whale. Or I guess that's not my white whale. That's one of the whales that I'm trying to get after. So yeah, I'll poke around. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, buddy. I will say that I have a client who's an author, and she had done something where she was like, well, you know, I'm going to try this myself, and what I will say is what she created as somebody who's done this for a little while was almost fucking offensive. You know, it was like, you know, bad fingers, bad eyes, bad faces. And I was just like, this is, and you put this out to your readers, I was just like, oh God, you know, the stuff we just did had, everything was so perfect. You know, I did so much that I tried to make sure she was good on. And, you know, then when she tried it herself, it was like, oh, that's rough. So yeah bro, I feel you.
The point I'm after is to try to like advertise, drum up interest and engagement. And if you put out something, an image that looks low effort or crappy, that actually probably has the opposite intended effect. You probably have been better off not doing anything at all.
Well, I disagree with that. Where I felt like she didn't do the right thing was it's inconsistent, because then she came back to me and was like, well, I want to do this campaign now, and I want to kind of change what we were doing before. But she had already established these characters, and she used Canva to reproduce them. And I mean, like, they look okay, but they're definitely not what I'm giving her. Like, what I gave her just recently, you know, the only argument she had with me is, oh, they look younger than I was expecting them to. Meanwhile, every spec that she had for them is what I put into the AI. And, you know, I think there was also a little bit of like age blindness, because she's like, oh, well, you know, they're supposed to be early 40s. And I was like, they look a little older than me, and I'm early 40s as well. So I think, you know, maybe you just kind of relook at that and, you know, just kind of gauge your understanding. But that's the thing. If it's something you can do consistently, it really doesn't matter where you get it from. It's when you step up, you really don't want to step back down. You know, it's one of those things like if you put out, if you put out a book that has this much production quality to it, the next book should either be equal or raise it. If you go noticeably lower, that's where it gets rough. That's where it's like, yeah, you might want to reconsider that. Yeah. Or at least have asked me. You know, I would have said, yeah, here's how you do it for free. Go ahead, do it yourself. But at least don't make your brand look like shit.
Or even like changing the styles. Or yeah, like you said, like changing what the characters look like. It's similar to if you're writing and if you're doing, I don't know, like third person limited for a few chapters, and then all of a sudden you switch to omniscient. Well, it's like, you know, just being inconsistent, it like throws you off, and it's like, well, maybe you don't really have a clear image of what you're going for here, or like the character motivations change. Like you said, you want to be consistent. That's a good point. I still wouldn't want to just like myself go on to Midjourney, and I could be consistent with the style of Midjourney, like tell it, okay, do this in impressionist style. I still probably wouldn't be happy with
it. You know? Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. We actually went through this recently. Me and Michael were on a team we were pitching a music video, and, you know, there's four artists in it, and me and another artist were kind of generating images at the same time. He uses a lot more Midjourney. I use Stable Diffusion. And there were things that didn't, like, each of the images were good for if they were in flow of that situation. But together they had a really kind of opposing aesthetic that honestly I didn't even really see. And I was just like, nah, it's not possible. And, you know, I kind of went through the seven stages of grief really quick to see that, you know what, yeah, there are things that need to mesh well and there are things that don't. And so it's one of those things. It's a matter of, you can lean into the jank of AI if you want to. And especially if that's where your level is, you know, it's one of those things. Like if you're at a point where you really don't have budget to, you know, get somebody hired on to do commissions, and you really just kind of have the time and, you know, ability to go play, you know, but don't jump up to jump back down. Or if you jump up, then, you know, and you have all this additional production value, talk to that person that helped you do it. But more than likely, almost every AI artist I know, or somebody, or an artist who uses AI, will be very open, you know, and they'll tell you like, hey, yeah, you might want to try this or try that next time, tweak your prompts a little bit, you know, they'll give you pointers. Because honestly, it's all about all of us being able to have that creativity. Because if we all have it, then, you know, there might be a point where it's not really a commission. It's more like a collaborative, where if you're a writer and you know this person, you worked with them before, but now it's more like you're both at a big point, there could be a collaboration more than a commission there. And that might work out for both of you. So that's why don't be bashful, you know, try it out, lean into the jank. If it's something you can do and you feel like you got it good enough to where you want to put it out, and then, you know, just keep working with it. Cause it's honestly, it's all about just raw, just keep going. It's, none of this is really, the skill comes in the curation really with AI, especially.
Chrissy, what's going on? You're hanging out. And for the other folks, if I pass you an invite, or if you would like to come up and talk, you're more than welcome to. But Chrissy, you're hanging out. And what have you been working on? What are you promoting? What are you doing? How is your day?
It's going good. I've missed several spaces, so I'm going through withdrawal. But I'm working on a project that I can't really speak about yet. But I have been, for my project, I have been reading some stuff from the 1550s, which is not easy.
That's awesome.
Reading a sentence like sometimes three times because they spoke so differently.
So anyway, while we're on the topic, and you don't want to talk about it, you know, tell us exactly all the details of what it is you're working on, and disclose everything. No, that sounds awesome.
I can say it's a period piece. I am so excited about the images I'm getting like really good shots, and I'm trying to be as historically factual as possible. And I'm excited about it. So I can't wait till I can share more.
It sounds awesome. And I'm going to go into another piece here for my last short story. The one that is tagged on my pinned tweet on my profile for the Relic of the Aztecs. I was digging through a bunch of old documentation from some of it going back to the 1500s, 1600s, where it was like records of these monks and clergymen who were working with the Aztecs and indigenous people to translate Nahuatl into Spanish and stuff. So wow. I feel you.
It's so fun. When I first started AI, my very first thing was like an AI and people in history with AI. So it's like, it's on like my highlights tab, probably all the way down at the bottom. This was, you know, well over a year ago at this point, I think, where I was trying to replicate, you know, just historical people. And then I kind of drifted from that since I, you know, obviously was learning a lot, playing a lot, experimenting a lot. But I've always loved history. So I'm super excited about this project and it's looking really good so far.
Yeah, sounds awesome. Definitely looking forward to it. You know, obviously want to know more, but I understand your discretion in this case.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With what you're doing, are you, because I'm guessing the 1500s, it's definitely not photography, but, you know, are you generating images for that? Or are you using paintings or whatever renderings that exist from whatever is going on at the time? Like, what's that process like for you?
I actually am making it like it's a movie shot today. So it has like beautiful costume design, but it's very cinematic looking. So it's, I guess, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something we will watch that might have been old. Like it's like a cinematic type drama type thing. So it is still very, I have very cinematic looking people. It looks realistic. So I am using photography prompts to get what I want and the shots that I want. Because I don't want it to be like stylized as, you know, 1500s painting or anything.
Or there's a chance to do a little bit of both. You know, you could do the clean cinematography, and then you can do the totally stylized AI cut.
That would be fun.
Yeah, something to think about.
Yep. Yeah, actually, so I got tacked on to a project that's using a lot of old Japanese paintings. And they're from this very specific time in Japanese culture. And, you know, it's one of those things that the reason why I got tacked on to the project is because of my use of AI and how blending those worlds into each other kind of is the thing when I pitched it, they were like, "This, you're so good at this." I was like, "Well, thank you. Hire me." And, but the thing about that I like is going from those two worlds, you know, and going from one world into another and then back. And that's kind of something that I will say it's impactful. Especially, I don't know, like what your audience is as far as who got you on the project, but if they're not familiar with AI, it's like, it brings down the house. You know, they've been working with this image for so long. Either it was painted by one of their artists from a rendering that they saw from an actual thing from the time or whatever, and they've been staring at it for so long. And then when you show them it in motion, and then not only motion, but translated to something more cinematic, I mean, it brings the house down. Like, there are people just like, how the hell is this possible? And all this other stuff, I'm just like, yeah, you know, it's what we do. It's how we do it. And so, you know, yeah, those are great projects to get tacked onto just because of that whole like aspect of being able to bring something that they could never imagine could come to life, to life. And that was like the gold in that whole situation that I'm in.
That sounds amazing. Really cool. Yeah, now you're going to have me starting all over. I have a deadline. I'm like, but I had a new idea.
That's okay. You know, do the thing you were doing already and maybe do a little bit of the extra. In addition, Gonzalo, if you want to come and hang out, you're welcome to.
You know what? A big hit. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, yeah. All good. Yeah. What's been a big hit?
You have to add some bloopers at the end of your things. I have some golden ones that I can't wait to add as like a little funny thing at the end.
Yeah.
They had this this drawing of this person's daughter, essentially, in this story, and there is two generations that came out so funny. I've been submitting the folders to the people who have the project, and they were like, oh, well, I see you do a lot of generations. I was like, yeah, it's this mass. You just got to keep generating. And then they stumbled onto them, the two hilarious ones. And and they brought it up to me. I'm like, oh yeah, I know exactly which ones you're talking about. It's like 109 and 110. They're just one after the other. And the one was funnier than the other. They're so fucking great when those things happen, those happy accidents like that.
I love it. For this project, I just straight have a bloopers file now.
Smart. Poppy. Yeah, go ahead. I was gonna tag you in.
Nice to meet you. I've been attending Stephanie and Heidi's spaces, Writer's Block.
I saw you over there.
Yeah, nice to meet you. And it's kind of topic switch, but I'm wondering, in the world of fiction or even nonfiction, how important to marketing a book is the cover art?
It's relatively important, I would say. There's always that adage where you say, like, don't judge a book by its cover, but everybody is, aren't we? We're all doing that anyway. So,
yeah, and I'll just tell you, Michael, I love romance novels. I grew up on Jane Austen, but I used to buy the, bodice rippers where literally I found it in my, I'm going through my house now, downsizing. I've just recently retired from law, 42 years of that. So, and I'm getting ready to write songs. But also,
very cool. I have never heard that phrase, bodice rippers, putting that in the back pocket.
Oh, it's hilarious. Anyway, they're literally, Heidi, you might have seen it. Maybe it's like a Bible cover too. But they used to sell these at like Barnes & Nobles, like hide your book. Mm-hmm. Did anybody do that? Like a little zipper thing? Anyway, it's hilarious. But modern cover art, I feel like there's a real branding aspect to it. And when an artist, it seems like a writer, sometimes the writer and the visual artists are the same person. And sometimes they're not. And you're talking about AI. But I recently have seen, I mean, it's a whole different marketing thing. And I think there's a lot of room to be really creative. But also I've noticed if you're writing book after book, you want a consistency there, right? That's part of your brand.
To a degree.
And also I've got, sorry, this is how my mind works, Michael.
Yeah, but it's all good.
I'm thinking of my youngest kiddo who has an art degree. And my mom and I helped her during the worst of the pandemic attend tattoo school. And now she's a tattoo artist and loves it. It's like a sacred thing for her. And she'll, the customer. Anyway, it's just been amazing to watch. And of course, I'm concerned about AI because of artists, And there's a lot of people who are, they're not quite young people anymore. They always will be to me, my daughter's friends and so on who are artists, and just figuring out how they're going to make a living and all of that. But I think I recently saw some covers that were just the cutest thing. I mean, it's like, it's a romance, it's an adult book, but the cover looked like a little kid. You know what I mean? It made the characters like they were these little kid characters. I can't explain it, but the juxtaposition of that, and it was funny too, and the book was funny. It worked. So I'm thinking, is it that you're hooking a new reader who's just scanning through and they're going to be attracted to that art? Or is it? Anyway, I just want to hear your thoughts.
Let's dial into a couple things there. I think that, like, if you are maybe a newer genre writer, then getting a cover that is in line with that genre is valuable. If you are an established author who has a particular name that your audience knows, then all of a sudden that like needs to be very prominent and needs to be a focal point. Whereas like the cover art design of a book becomes maybe less. Thinking in terms of like music kind of works the same way. In early part of a lot of musicians' careers, they'll have maybe more artsy stuff. And then as they evolve, it's like their face and their name on the cover. Yeah. Chris, what's up?
Yeah. I'm going to go to something that has bothered me for so fucking long. I am a huge fan, and I'm not a huge fan of Stephen King in general, but I'm a huge fan of the Dark Tower series. And there is, in that whole world, there is the soft cover ones that were originally put out that were not part of the whole seven, because the whole seven wasn't out when the original couple of covers were out. And then there's the rest of the series. And then there's a consistent one that has all of them as one in one consistent look. And, you know, of course it's Stephen King, so no one gave a shit. Everyone bought it. But I'll tell you, as somebody who is a huge fan of it, I hate having a split between my fifth and sixth book in that series that the art is totally different. And it's totally like not what it was previously. The books are all the same, but the covers are so different that it bothers me. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think, as far as a series is concerned, I'd say consistency is a rather key thing. But as far as like, as a writer, if you're doing different stories, or you want to capture a different audience, especially if it's, you know, you're going from like romance to science fiction, you know, two very, very different genres, jumping cover styles won't be a big deal. But I think as far as a series, or if it's something that's a continuation in the same universe, stuff like that, you know, consistency is a real key thing. And then, I mean, if we want to talk about the whole AI thing, as far as the future of where art people are going to be, I could definitely talk on that, but just wanted to give you that feeling first, you know?
Pup, I would say, if you want to work with real artists, work with real artists. If you want to work with AI, work with AI. If you want your real artists to work with AI, that's an opportunity that you have. If you want your real artists to incorporate ideas that you've generated from AI, that's also an opportunity. I don't worry about the folks not having opportunities or not being able to like live in a post AI world. You know, perhaps some of their value becomes being aesthetically minded, being skilled in design, and like we're leaning less on the ideation or like the generation phase of things, which is always very choppy or tumultuous in general, as like an artist and a non-artist person try to find their middle ground or their common ground for what they want in that regard.
Well, yeah. And Michael, you know, my kid came up, of course, being a visual artist and using all different media there, but has incorporated so many digital tools. And what was one time, you know, it feels like there's both going on, you know. I think you could do both, but, but I just say, I don't know, maybe it's a way it's to honor. And honestly, I need to get my first tattoo. I have to take one for the team. So that's part of it, is we're figuring out what image. And that's a permanent decision. But no, I know what you mean about series too, Chris. Like, I'm thinking of books I've read where they totally changed and updated the whole cover and everything. And you're like, wait a minute. But I don't know. I have honestly, there's been books I've passed on because I hated the cover art.
But those Dune
kind of low stakes, changes, you know, right? What I mean? But I don't know. I was just curious about whether, you know, some readers scrolling by on Amazon or whatever. But it just seems like we're visual, right? And that's going to grab somebody to pull them in.
Yeah, I would say in terms of like Amazon or the marketplaces, you know, genre readers, they're going to cross paths with the stuff. But then additionally, like, you're going to have to do a lot of the legwork in terms of promotion and marketing of your book. Nick, I see you raise your hand. Robin also came up. So whoever, I'll let you guys flip a coin.
Heads.
All right. Heads it is.
I was just curious. Robin. When you're buying books, are you like going to a bookstore and perusing? Because I mean, I've personally got like a little different take, I guess, from what I've heard so far. Just in that, any books that I buy, I'm going into a bookstore and I know what I want, and I'm getting it on Amazon. I'm generally, you know, like Melville or or Dostoevsky. It's, you know, I couldn't have cared less what the covers looked like when I went in there and bought it, or I'm just buying my friend's books. And I look at their cover art to kind of get a vibe, but yeah, just me personally, like I'm not buying based on what I'm seeing in my hand. So I'm just, it sounds like same. You probably like to go to bookstores and peruse. I'm wanting to get a better understanding of where you're at.
You know, you're right. I have a pretty curated taste, and I'm usually following authors that I like, that I care about. But I'm also just, you know, when I sort of notice something, I mean, I'm not sure it affected me that much. But if I see a whimsical cover or something interesting, it might, because sometimes I will just on not just go by reviews or authors I like, but now and then I will on impulse sort of check someone out. And so I'm not going to do that purely based on whatever visual thing, but I don't know. It just, I was just really intrigued by this art that I saw. And like I said, the juxtaposition of the cute kind of, it just made it sort of accessible. And I don't know, to me, the cover, that could be a really sophisticated thing, right?
Not just definitely a craft,
you know, like who are you trying to reach? And I don't know how much editorial control in traditional publishing the author has over the cover choice. So
it depends on whatever they've established, but typically not a lot.
So that would be horrifying, right? If you see a cover that is just, you hate it. It's like not what you don't think it represents, you know, what your book is.
The other aspect I'd also say is, you know, marketing is a big deal. And this is one of the things that I think is kind of key to AI is being able to rendition on things. You know, like having a Pixar-esque Fabio cover would be fucking hilarious. You know, like that's something that if I was a fan, like seeing a long blonde haired Pixar character, like holding a woman and this whole, you know, all the whole scene. Everybody knows this scene. Or,
yeah, yeah, with his glittering teeth and looking at himself in the mirror sideways. Yeah, the hair. Oh, my gosh.
Right. Like, I'm picturing the father from The Incredibles with long blonde hair. And, like, that's something that, you know, if I was a fan, would make me go, huh, that's funny. I really need to pick up that new edition or new volume or whatever the thing is. I also have a friend of mine who's a really, really fervent reader. And her thing is that if it has motorcycles, fire, and, like, women on the cover, she's buying it. And she doesn't even have to know the title. She doesn't have to read the description. She goes basically on that because she knows that's, like, her thing. That's her reading thing. And so there are consumers who are like that, you know, where it's like, you know, I need my three things, my four things, my one thing, whatever it is. Like for me with music, like I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan. I'm not a fan of their recent albums, but I do like their cover art, and I would buy the album, the vinyl, just because it's a big piece of that cover art. And like, that's something I would do for a visual sense. But I also have all my classic Pink Floyd albums that I love the cover art on, as simple as they may be. So it's, you know, it's one of those things that there's a consumer for everything. It's just a matter of what feels good to you.
Just quickly, for the folks that are hanging out here listening, if you'd like to come up and promote or talk, ask questions of the people that are here, you know, request the mic. I'll bring you up. This is not, there's nothing exclusive happening here. Robin, what's happening?
Hi. Thanks for hosting this wonderful space. My first time here.
We do it every 2 weeks. Come on back.
My first time here. It's really interesting discussion about visual art and AI, which I have no aptitude for, but it's very interesting to me. And I have two questions for the AI visual artists here. The first question is, when does an author or a writer usually come to you and ask for cover art? Is it Are they working on a draft? Are they totally done? What part of the process are they in? And then my second question is about your interaction with the writers. Do you like it when writers say, I want my cover to be blue and I want this and I want that? Or do you like the writers to sort of butt out and let you do your work and then you sort of show a few different images and let the writer pick from the images that you've created?
I'm going to jump on this real quick because the last two books I've put out have been AI covers. So in that sense, I like when the writer butts out and then just allows the visual person to take over and, gets that part of things done without necessarily being super concerned with whatever editorial notions they might have had. And I am talking about myself here, just saying, like, there's things that I want as a writer to be conveyed. And then there's things that I want as some kind of visual soothsaying that doesn't always necessarily fit the narrative in a one-to-one sense, but does something that makes me feel good or happy in somebody who's, again, doing that visual soothsaying. That's my perspective on it.
I got a bone to pick with this. I've had clients. I've had, as far as authors, I've had about three different clients. My most recent one is very hands-off. And the problem with that in AI is the AI is more of a curation is key than it is to process. You know, it's like with a regular, so I also go into films, and one of the things I've had, you know, it's interesting in films is like, oh, well, you know, if we need to make a change, we'll allow you the time to make the change. It's like, yeah, that's not really where the trouble is. It's not about how we make the change. It's about how many times I make that change, which one works with you, you know? And that's really why, for me, hands-on is way better, just because I could show you a million versions of a rough, like, idea of how this AI thing will look, whatever it may be, you know, whether it's like art inside the book, whether it's cover art, whatever, you know. But it's one of those things that once we pick one, that's when, you know, any changes to that, that's where it starts getting like really tricky. And that's where I kind of like the hands to come off, just because, like, that's where refining that is the classic, you know, classic digital artist issue, where it's like, you know, a client over your shoulder, nudge this, nudge left, nudge right, nudge left, nudge right, and you're not even moving the fucking thing. You're just leaving it in one spot, and it just seems like it's moving, you know. So with AI, it's a very different type of process. But I'd also say the other part is I've always had people come in way after, and I think that that's fine. I think it makes it more sense to come in way after, just because if you've locked everything in your visuals, all we do as far as people who use AI is, like, we'll just take your visuals and lock them in further for you. Doing it from the very beginning before anything's locked, there's no need for it. Like, we can really make anything. And most, even non-AI artists, most artists I know who have a visual style, it's not a matter of what they can make. It's a matter of what do you need. There's on one hand, I'd really like more hands-on as far as like locking in this visual. But on the other hand, when it comes down to finishing it and refining it and making it, you know, production ready, is where I'd like the hands to come off. Cause it's like, we've picked this. All we need to do is make this look better. And most of the time, especially with me, is like, by the time we make it to that, it's not much more work needs to be done to make it that much better for production ready. So it's one of those times where it's like doing anything here is almost nitpicking.
Yeah. In the sense that it matters when you get started on cover design. I guess if you have a lot of time, then being able to iterate or make sure that you can get to work with the people that you want to work with, that becomes an aspect of it. That scheduling or conflicts, that might be something that's important to consider, even with AI, because like, you know, you can kick out as many generations as you want doesn't necessarily mean that the person you want to work with is going to have the time to do that and to go and do the back and forth with you. Or if you have like a release date in mind, a schedule that you want to meet, then that's something that you also have to consider. Heidi, what's going on? Welcome to the stage. Glad to have you.
I'm wondering, since there's a bunch of AI artists in here, if I could ask a fairly specific question of you guys.
You might be able to.
So I created like some AI art to kind of go along with characters in my novel, right? And I've messed with it some, but I've got some faces, right, that I like. How can I continue to create art with those faces? I've been using Midjourney, and I'm, you know, oh, someone's laughing.
Character so reference. Anyway, yeah.
How does that work? Because I can't figure it out.
You put in the command, it's like hyphen C R E F inside of there, and then you're able to reference that image as the character that you want to pull into your new generations. Chrissy, are you a Midjourney user? A heavy Midjourney user?
I am, and I don't love the results of character reference.
Me neither. Like, I'll be honest with you. I don't love them.
I was going to offer another solution. My solution is called Akool, A-K-O-O-L, and it's a face swapping.
One more time.
A-K-O-O-L.
A-K-O-O-L.
And it's a face swapping tool, and it's so easy to use. And it's the best way to get, you know, the same character's face throughout the whatever you're working on. The only thing is, it does not copy the hair. So I always prompt with someone. Typically, I say long brown hair because that shows up nicer in Midjourney than like red hair and blonde hair. You get too many different variances. So I say long brown hair usually. And then I will, or I'll get very specific with the hair prompt, and then I have to use that every time. But then I swap out the face, and it looks really good. And even if you've gotten a good image that then isn't, you know, it's kind of morphing some, whenever you get your video, it doesn't matter, because you could take that video, if as long as it's not major morphing, once you run your video through Akool, it face swaps it and it looks perfect. Yes, I think it's the best thing out there. It's so simple to use. It renders very fast. So I'm a huge fan of that option. It's obviously an extra step in your generations, but
right.
You know, we're all taking a million steps anyway. So what's one more?
It's definitely solid. I'm checking it out right now. I mentioned their pricing is interesting, but if it's something that works with you, then honestly, that's where I'd go. It's one of those things that I never shit on a tool if it works, you know, especially if it's somebody that gets, you know, you get what you get out of it. Like, that's, go for it. Like, obviously.
And if I had to dwindle down my subs, this would be one of the last.
Wow. You get rid of Midjourney before you get rid of this?
No, that's why I said one of the last.
I'm always trying to convert people off of Midjourney, so I'm sorry. I'm a Midjourney hater. So
well, it's one like of those things I'm always.
Why? I'm curious. Why do you hate Midjourney? If I can jump in, sorry.
Well, I don't want to jump on Chrissy. Chrissy, you still talking? I'm sorry.
Oh no! I was just saying. I do Leonardo too. I just it became one of those things. You use what you're comfortable with.
Right. Yeah. I stopped using Midjourney almost 2 years ago because I think first I wasn't really getting stuff that I was loving out of it. And then B, I think I ran out of credits and I was like, well, if I'm not getting things that I like and I also have to pay for it, then this isn't really the speed that I want. But definitely has come a long way since then. And the people that I see working on it, you know, that I respect their work, I think they get great results from it. I think it definitely has like a tone and a style that is relatively identifiable that makes it a little bit, maybe mundane or cliche at this point. But beyond that, I would say that if you are, you know, an artiste with the accent, you know, then you're really able to drill into generally unseen territory on Midjourney.
So my two cents, I haven't used Midjourney since it's probably been 2 years, maybe, since I've actually used it. I used it for a test recently, and it was the same things that I didn't like about it then, I still don't like about it. My thing about Midjourney is a lot of what Michael just said. Like, there is a very, in my eyes, for having seen a million images and every different generator, beta tested fucking everything. It's one of the ones that really does still, no matter how much they add to it, has a very specific look. And it's like Chrissy using Leonardo, I push more than Midjourney because the things that Leonardo does well, it does really well. I've used Leonardo. I was a beta tester for Leonardo, and kind of the thing I liked about them was they have their own models and they have their own kind of styles, and they have a style too that's very apparent. But it's a style that has a lot more fun to it, and their style is more like the art style that they have. That is more common. Midjourney, more of what I don't like about them is its composition sameness over and over and over again. The composition is very, very, very similar from image to image, especially if you prompt certain things, you know, and it really doesn't matter what you add to or change to it. There's also an issue I have with Midjourney, and this is more of an AI aesthetics type of thing or AI ethics type of thing, where I use Stable Diffusion and I would use Leonardo, but where I won't use it is because of what's called prompt injection, where if you prompt something, what Midjourney does behind the scenes, and there's all sorts of back and forth about if they do this and how they do it, but behind the scenes, they inject words into your prompt to get it to be where they would like it aesthetically for you to put it out, having been a Midjourney image. They don't want you putting out shit Midjourney images because it makes the overall brand look worse. But with that, there are biases that happen with that I don't particularly like. And I think it adds to the sameness, because once you start stacking systems on top of each other and you have systems that control other systems, you'll see things that start to come out in that control pattern. So that's why I, you know, anybody who uses it, you know, it's one of those things, like if you question it, I'll be the, you know, the zealot that's like, no, come away. But if it's something that, like, I would never tell Chrissy to do it just because I know her work and her work is amazing. And I've never had this like inclination that, you know, she feels trapped by any of the tools that she uses, because anytime like we talk about a new tool, she has always a great take on it. But it's one of those other things where, you know, I've told people like, you know, I can't afford it. It's really tough. It's really expensive. You know, I've pushed people on to other tools just because like there is that pay barrier that I don't like about Midjourney too, where to do things that are not exactly that difficult for Midjourney to compute wise to handle. Like, there are other things that do really, really great work. Like Playground AI is a free generator, and they have so many like facets to them that's so epic. They're making their own models. They're free to a point now. They used to be completely kind of free. Now there is a paywall, but it takes a lot to get to it. And if somebody was like kind of came to me today and is like, I want to try some stuff, I just say go to playgroundai.com and try some stuff out. It's going to be fish out of water for you for a while. But once you start getting the consistency in what you're generating better and better and better, that's where I'd be like, either invest into being a Playground user or, you know, try something else. There's another level where I'd be able to tell you, like, you can get, there are things you like, you can get it this way. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that it's a rabbit hole for sure. It's not something that's you could just kind of walk into. But, you know, that's my, and I could go on for too long on this and on as far as Midjourney and Apple. So don't even like, not even worth it.
Yeah. Just briefly for the people hanging out, if you have come in and you want to come up and talk, or you have questions, or you want to promote something, you know, we're hanging out at least a little bit longer. You know, eventually I'll wrap this up, but in the meantime, you know, Chrissy, go ahead.
I just wanted to say real quick, I only use Midjourney for people also, because anything else, And again, I mostly, for those that don't know me, I do mostly AI film. All of my animals or my sceneries and all of that stuff that I get, I do text prompting in Runway. So I can't wait for Leonardo also to get some more video capabilities, because they do great with motion. They do great with their images. So I'm sure whenever they get more on the text prompting for video, it's going to be great too. So I prefer text prompting anytime I can use it. And Runway used to have really good text prompting for people. I have a baby on my profile pin that is just a text prompt in Runway that looks so real. But I haven't been able to get that recently. So hopefully it goes back.
I like this conversation around imagery and motion as it relates to writing. And I think that, like, you know, given, oh yeah, Brian, come on up. I got a request here and I'm trying to do it there. Yeah, Brian's up here. So the thing I think, you know, we as writers do is try and be visual, right? And in a lot of ways, there's these other mediums that are, they put that up front, you know, to kind of go between those two things, you know, like we've been doing with the AI film stuff recently. To create that, you still have to start with the written word. If I want to create images and then get into motion, it still is starting with editorial, the notes that I write and the thinking process and revision process, you know, that whole creative process at large. It still really comes from like taking notes of words and phrases and sentences and little bits of things. And I've even, you know, kicked this stuff into LLMs and see what it spits out. And sometimes I like little bits and pieces of that. I'll grab from here and there and start shuffling it around or reorganizing things and moving them around and stuff in that way, and kind of just keep carving out a path to the coast. Brian, what's going on? How are you?
Thanks for bringing me up. And it's always fun hearing Chris see Chris talk, and respect all of you very, very much in what you do. And yeah, I don't have much to talk about. Just want to say hello. I'm just working through a pitch deck for Open Story to try to secure some funding. But that's about it. Otherwise, I've used a lot of the tools. The tools lately I was playing around with is LensGo and the style transfer. So I was taking some home footage of my wife walking the dog, and I prompted it for a small elephant, and it did it. It's quite fun. So that's really what I'm kind of experimenting with, is taking home footage and acting in front of it, and then using style transfer. Anyways.
Yeah, no, I think that's cool. I don't use style transfer really ever or at all. And it's something, you know, that keeps getting brought up by other folks. And the thing about it is that I like when I see it from other people, and I never like it when I do it myself for whatever reason. Doesn't really ever feel good while I'm working through doing stuff. And I've tested it a couple times on different things, and I end up just being like, ugh. And then I go a long period of time without touching it again. But that said, whenever I see other people's stuff and they're like, well, here's the original thing, and then here it is pushed through style transfer, I'm like, that's very cool. I wish I could feel that way about the stuff that I was playing with as I do about the things that person's doing. But, you know, maybe that'll happen in the future. Brian, I want to talk about your Discord server real quick.
Sure.
Because I feel like that is a valuable resource. So here we are. I'm looking back in. I've got it up on screen. I'm looking at it. And if you want to, I would say post up a link for folks so they can check it out. We are writers here and creatives, and there might be some value there. So there's a lot of categories, very good and useful stuff. I see you're creating more combinations of not only forum channels, but then the chat channels. And I think that's the positive direction. 'Cause like the forums, right, are great for topical stuff where people can kind of drill down very deep into, maybe something they're working on or a theme or a topic. But then the chat side of things is kind of like very much like Twitter, where it's like real time or like whatever's happening in the community can actually get discussed. And it doesn't necessarily need to be short term, but it also doesn't need to be something that has to be like its own kind of isolated piece. So I like when both of those two things are kind of set next to each other. I think it's useful that way. I'm glad to see you're doing it.
Yeah, I've liked the forum piece because of that ability to separate the topics. So, but the chat piece is definitely a huge component because you can definitely have those conversations. So that's the Discord was created based on taking all hearing all this input and all of this discussion around taking novels or screenplays and visualizing them, and even as we're talking today about book covers, I just see that there should be one resource that should be decentralized that should allow anybody to connect and educate themselves into writing novels, writing stories, and then be able to connect with artists and visual artists, producers, directors. And that I still believe all should be decentralized so that the trust is there, and then you can connect and have a community that is helping each other move and educate. And even for myself, I don't class myself as a writer, but I've been writing all my life, and I do have education in screenplay writing, but I just see that that opportunity to work with other people to continue to build your skill set, and that's sort of it is what Open Story is about, and being able to collaborate with other artists like Lensco, Morph Studios, Saturn Series is on there, AI Art Today is on there. The ability to be able to connect and then be able to take from that community and then move into other communities is just as important, so that you don't need to stay in the Open Story Hub. You can then expand into the areas that you enjoy or like doing. But it's also a good resource for people that are looking for artists for book covers and questions and that sort of thing. So yeah, thanks, Michael. And I'll put a link up here.
What's up, Chris?
Well, I also wanted to kind of like push Open Story a bit, just because it's one of those things that I remember from the very beginning, seeing the GitHub and seeing what Brian wanted to do with it. It's one of those things, like when I saw that there was the earlier version of Save the Cat that was, openly available, and also, kind of this open resource for universities to always be able to hand off to their students, and, something like that. I was like, that's great, because I've heard I mean, dozens of times I've had that book recommended to me, and whether or not I feel it was really useful. So what I was trying to write at the time is, it's different. It was like that. This is the resource. Like, this isn't exactly it, but okay. But then seeing what Brian wanted to create, I was like, oh yeah, this is what I'm talking about. You know, this is the thing that I was always interested in having for, you know, when I kind of struck out onto Twitter as Chris Hackett, because I was kind of doxxed for a while. And, you know, and it was like I wanted to find this open resource to do this. And I thought, you know, maybe if it was going to be anywhere, it was going to be on Twitter. Lo and behold, how many years later, when I'm already kind of knee deep in everything else, you know, Brian comes along and it's like, yeah, dude, like you're doing exactly what I needed from the very beginning. So it's one of those things, like I definitely push it to more people to kind of engage with it and understand it, and also just help Brian like develop it more, because the more minds that are on it, the more people trying stuff out, you know, it's that's where the key is, you know, and that's how open source just works that much better. It's more hands on deck breaking the thing instead of like, you know, how most things are where we want to be very precious. We don't want to break it. This is something where you want to break it so that when we put it back together, it's stronger and it's better than it was when, you know, when we broke it.
Well, shoot. How's everybody feeling? How are you doing? Are there things that we haven't talked about yet today that have been on your mind and that you need to get out of your mind? Pup, I see you raised your hand.
Yes. I want to thank you for being generous to me, and because I was a stupid head. Here you are, a bunch of very skilled AI creators, and I get on and go, what about the artists? So thank you for not, you know, kicking me out.
Oh,
I
okay.
wasn't fully paying attention to where I was. And I really appreciate hearing you talk about this level of craft. It's fascinating. You make me almost want to play with it.
You should.
You know, with my little stick figure drawings.
Yeah.
I keep asking my daughter, teach me botanical paint.
I'm going to let you in on a little secret here. And yeah, Chris has seen two of the renderings, two of the images that I've been working on these characters. One is red and one is green. Their bodies were sticks when I drew them. So they, when I drew them in.
So I'm in the right room. Okay.
Welcome back. The head was actually very, you know, what I started with was very drawn, an old image from quite a long time ago that a friend and I had come up with, but it didn't have a body. It just had a head. So I was like, well, let's see how bad I can do and how good it can get. And honestly, you know, I think it did pretty decently with it. And it, again, like I cannot stress how much it was just literal stick lines coming out from underneath of a huge head, and it turned it into a proper body and appendages. So, you know, start with what you can do and then work from there. Again, I'll kick it around one more time. If anybody has any last thoughts, comments, complaints, I'm sure. Go ahead.
I don't have a complaint. I just want to say to Puppy, like, this is always what you should do. It's one of those things that I think a lot more people who use AI would appreciate, is just having that question, because it's a good question. It's not an off question. It's something you should always be asking, is like, how is this going to fit in this world? Because what happens to people who use AI a lot is that conversation gets shut down before it even gets to start. And that's like really where it gets rough. You know, we want to have these conversations with people, not even because we want them to use the tool more. It's just, we would like to dispel all the bullshit. You know, it's one of those things that we don't get to do very often, because the ideas of how to use this and the ethics behind it, they're still not figured out. And we're all understanding of that. But the other part of it is, like, while it's here, while we can use it, let's have the conversation on how to use it better, or how to not use it better, or where it fits or where it doesn't. Because a lot of the time, like, I tell people, like, oh, this is this, and, you know, it's taken work from this artist. I'm like, wouldn't an artist really like to have something to work off of, instead of, you know, saying like, oh, just make something in this universe and it doesn't matter what it looks like. And then it does matter what it looks like when it looks like garbage. There's so much more of an enriching conversation to have around how we can help artists better with this tool, whether they use it or not, than it is to not have that conversation. So I'm just like, you know, I'm really appreciate the connotation, but you should always be having that conversation. And if anyone has any problems with it or gives you any shit, send them to me. I'll straighten them out.
Thank you for rebranding what I thought of as rudeness. I love, yeah. And you're right. It's intentional and it is a big issue. And I have watched some people I dearly love who are artists put years in. And so I think it shouldn't be a zero-sum game of one or the other. I'd like to figure out ways where it can include everyone. And creativity is such a collaboration. Anyway, I need to make sure I'm following both of you now so that I'm following your art. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Chrissy, how is it? What are you thinking?
I just wanted to mention that myself and many, many other AI artists were artists before this. I was a painter. And I know many other AI artists that did some type of art beforehand. So I think my original goal was, oh, I love these AI images. I can use them for reference photos for my paintings instead of having to drive all around the countryside because I was a landscape painter. So that was what my thought process was. And then I had to stop painting just because I have something wrong with my hands, but it just opened a whole new world because then I started down my history thing and then I started into the AI film thing. But I have talked to artists that were very anti-AI, and then once they saw anybody can create an image in an AI, but to create what you want and what you have in your brain is a creative process. And when they realize that, they're less anti-AI. And then they start to see it as a tool, I think. I hope. But it's a great conversation to have all the time. I think that almost every AI person I've ever met sympathizes and empathizes with every artist out there and anyone that's scared for their future, because that's a natural human reaction. And you know, you can't blame someone for being worried about something they've invested so much time and money in, you know, being ripped away from them. So it's a good conversation and it's always a great dialogue. And you'll definitely have people that will never agree, but at least if you can get your story across somewhere. And then the only other point that I would like to make is that sometimes kind of helps people is that for those with disabilities, there's a lot of artists that had disabilities and had to stop doing their art. And now AI has kind of brought them back to a whole new life. So just some of my perspectives there.
Yeah, definitely seen that happening. You know, for me, being not a visual artist, to be able to play around in the visual realm and to be able to create magical scenes or carve out whatever it is that you imagine has been helpful. Again, you know, my last two book covers have been AI. Well, actually, let me rephrase that. The last two fiction pieces that I've put out have been AI covers. You know, there will be more, I'm sure, in the future. Super useful for the people that are hanging out. Above in the nest is the link to the recorded session. I record these locally, put them out as a podcast every 2 weeks, typically the Monday before our Wednesday session when we hang out here. I'll try to schedule the next one in the coming days. You can look for that here on Twitter. I try to post it on the other social platforms in the days before, just as a reminder, if you follow me there or if we're connected somewhere else. In general, again, you know, I appreciate everybody for hanging out and talking today. I feel like the conversation has been good. We've talked writing. We've talked Twitter spaces. We've talked creativity. We've talked imagery, film, and all of the little nodes and networking lines that connect in between them all. Very good conversation. Do appreciate you hanging out. Talk to you before too long and enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. It was great space.